1-800-636-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Now you can bring Berkey Purification Power anywhere with the Sport Berkey Filtration Bottle. Ideal for sporting games, camping or boating, or Sport Berkey is small enough to store in your glove box, so it's ideal backup for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, floods, or earthquakes. It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles, the Sport Berkey's patented filter formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon-222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $70.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Peter Hammond from the In Touch Ministries, a frontline fellowship, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in Africa. Actually, Peter's just here for a short period of time. He runs a large organization that has ministries. They're going into almost all the countries in Africa. Peter, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan. Always good to be with you.
Well, it's always good to have you. And now remember, this is an entirely different audience, so you can repeat everything we talked about the other morning there on our Colorado audience. But Sydney, let's talk a little bit for our listeners here about what's going on in Zimbabwe, because I should say in Zimbabwe used to be Rhodesia, because the average American really doesn't understand the horror that American State Department and Henry Kissinger has brought on that tragic nation that has been supported and continues to be supported with American tax dollars. What is going on in Zimbabwe today?
Well, Dr. Stan, it's a catastrophe. It's a collapse. There's massive, pervasive electrical power failures. You can go a month without any electricity in the capital city. Complete breakdown of water services, massive outbreak of cholera. Schools and hospitals have been closing. One school hadn't had electricity for 5 years or water. There's such a breakdown of all social services and such pervasive power failures that you can just imagine what has happened as thousands are dying of cholera, anthrax. Zimbabwe's got something in the region of 94% unemployment, astronomical inflation. I've got some copies of $20 billion notes with me, but they're worth absolutely nothing. There was 231% inflation last year, and this year it's in the quintillions. Trillions of dollar notes are worth absolutely nothing. Fuels in short supply, plumbing and electricity rare. Half the population has fled the country. So what you can see in Zimbabwe is exactly what socialism can do for a country. It's absolutely destroyed civilization in that once great country.
Well, of course, the thing is that Rhodesia, when I lived in Africa, was really a first world nation. It had, you know, all the facilities, the roads, the schools, the hospitals. There was no apartheid there. Everybody could vote. You had to have a certain property or education. What was the requirement for
That's
voting?
Right. Rhodesia wasn't a racial country. It was what they call a qualified franchise, that anyone of any race could vote, provided they had a certain level of education or property ownership. It was either or. And this meant that there were, of course, black representatives in government, and it was increasing. And they were looking forward to the goal. In the mid-60s, they were hoping for the goal of soon having 50% of the elected representatives being black. But then the communists started to target black voters, black town councillors, black members of parliament, and torture them and mistreat them, and of course all the brutal different tactics from petrol bombs onwards. And so blacks started to be too afraid to get involved in the electoral process, but it wasn't because the whites said they weren't allowed to be there. It was because the communists were targeting them so that they could give the false impression to the world that Rhodesia had some kind of racial segregation system, which it actually did not.
Well, of course, the thing is that our State Department certainly knew what the situation was, and yet they backed the communists. They would not allow them to Rhodesia to have a black leader. Mr. Mezuwaye was elected democratically. We wanted to impose upon them. Mugabe was trained at Oxford, but he was also trained in communist China. He was a thug. He was a criminal. And we put him in there, and we've kept him in power for 19 years. That's the tragedy that most people really don't understand. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Peter Hammond right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Peter, my understanding is that Mugabe actually has been defeated in about three elections, and yet he refuses to leave power. Why is the United States continue sending humanitarian aid to keep this thug in power?
Well, indeed, it's completely outrageous. In Zimbabwe, the people of Zimbabwe, despite massive terrorism, intimidation, persecution by the state against the people, and despite every kind of irregularity and the government controlling radio, TV, everything like that, and murdering many, many tens of thousands of innocent people, even members of parliament to opposition members have been arrested and tortured. Most opposition members of parliament have been arrested and tortured by the government police. In fact, Mugabe lost the election in the year 2000. He lost it in 2004, and he lost it last year in 2008. Yet he's remained in power. It's the one country in the world where the opposition's got more seats, more votes, and yet they're not the government. So it just shows what a charade and a farce the elections are in Zimbabwe, that even when the people have overwhelmingly rejected this miserable Marxist, Robert Mugabe, yet they're still forced to live under him for another 8 years. And actually he's been in power not 19 years, it's 29 years.
Right.
And he's trying to be like Fidel Castro and just be in power forever.
Well, for our listeners out there, our guest is Peter Hammond from Frontline Ministries, who heads a ministry that has branches all across Africa, certainly in South Africa, Rhodesia, Angola, going up into the Congo. And so Peter can give us a great overview of what's happening over there. And tragically, the United States, of course, they're never going to tell the American people this, but tragically, the American government continues giving humanitarian aid to Mugabe's government, which means, of course, you've got food to feed your soldiers and your police, and then everybody else can starve to death. But you have to have a power structure, and the United States and Great Britain are maintaining that power structure. Why would we do that when, of course, they've totally abrogated the whole concept of democracy? They've been voted out, but they keep staying there. They're getting, of course, a lot of help from our good friends over in communist China. We could, of course, tell the communist Chinese to go fly a kite. We're going to put a tariff on everything they have and topple their government if they don't stop backing Mugabe, but we wouldn't want to do that. We wouldn't want to do anything to help those people there. And in a country where we impose this rule, what's happening today as far as the church? What's happening as far as medical care? What's happening to the average individual there with a 95% unemployment rate?
It's just a battle for people to even survive. And we have to smuggle in food because, as you know, any aid that is designated for Zimbabwe gets in the hands of the government.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Peter Hammond from Frontline Fellowships. And Peter is just saying that they're smuggling in food. They're smuggling in medical supplies. And because, of course, for many areas, this is the only source of sustenance at all. And if they keep brought in through regular ways, it would all be seized and used by the government. And they recently had a big party for Mugabe. I think it was, I forgot what birthday it was. They were eating caviar. It cost a couple of $100,000 while the people are starving.
Brilliant.
Go right ahead, Peter.
In fact, millions, absolutely extraordinary. He had this birthday party with over $100 million worth of extravagance for his pals and party hacks, and the people are starving. It's absolutely bizarre to see the opulence of Mugabe and his communist cabinet, and they claim to be, you know, of the people. It reminds one of Animal Farm, you know, four legs good, two legs bad, and all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. This is just what George Orwell wrote about in 1984 in this classic Animal Farm. In Zimbabwe, what we have today is a group of Marxist thugs showing us exactly what socialism can do for a country. It's taken one of the best agricultural economies in Africa and destroyed it. They've invaded 5,500 white farms, looted, destroyed, pillaged, absolutely annihilated these productive farms, which were employing most of the people, providing food for most of the population, exporting food, providing most of the foreign currency, and now those farms are just derelict, destroyed, pillaged, to the extent of smashing and destroying farm equipment, burning crops, burning forests, destroying nature reserves. All of this done by Robert Mugabe, who continues to be received with great honor and popularity and standing ovations in the United Nations. And so it just shows what hypocrites and liars these people are in the United Nations, who claim to be Greens and claim to be concerned for the environment, when they support a regime, enthusiastically support a regime, which has done the worst destruction of game reserves anywhere on the continent that I've come across. They've literally been machine-gunning herds of elephant from helicopter gunships and Chinese-made MiG fighter jets. They've been destroying wildlife on a wholesale scale. It's absolutely disgraceful. And after destroying the agriculture, destroying the tourism industry, destroying the wildlife centers, they get requested to speak to the United Nations on sustainable development. And can you believe it? Robert Mugabe gets standing ovations from these hypocrites, these liars, who pretend to be concerned for the environment.
Well, of course, there was a gentleman who actually had run in opposition, and supposedly he was going to begin to share power with Mugabe. What happened there?
Well, Mugabe was in a fix. He was being rejected. He had no money, and so he felt that he could use the opposition, which of course should be the right government, of Morgan Tsvangirai, the Movement for Democratic Change, the MDC. And so he offered him a prime ministership where he could share power and have things like Ministry of Finance after Mugabe's destroyed all the economy. Obviously, the goal was that while Mugabe controls the police, the army, that sort of thing, that he could give the problems, the economic problems, to this opposition party, hoping that they would bring in more foreign aid to enable him to parasite or for longer. So this, of course, is an absolute sham because, you know, normally what happens, I don't think you see at the moment the Democrats sharing power with the Republicans in the White House. You have a winner-takes-all type of situation in most elections, and Mugabe's lost. And yet he's still the president. He's lost three times over, and he wants to share power, creating a new office of prime minister, which we haven't had for over 20 years in Zimbabwe, and with ill-defined powers, and ask them to run especially the economy, which, of course, is almost impossible because the economy is destroyed. And who wants to invest in a country where there's no security of property, where there's no rule of law, where there's no respect for life? And for that reason, while Mugabe controls the police and the army, it's unlikely that any government with any common sense or ethics is going to give them the investments that they want.
Well, in my understanding that the average length of life of a black man and a black woman there has fallen dramatically. I think the lifespan of a man used to be about 64 years old. What is it today? How long do the average person live in Zimbabwe?
Officially, it's now 32, but I think it should be less. 32 years. So the life expectancy of Zimbabwe has halved in the last 29 years since independence.
American tax day. Tax dollars at work. Well, let's. What about the church there? Is Christianity, you know, offering anything? Are the people turning to Christianity? Is there any hope for the church in Zimbabwe?
Yes, there is. I'm sorry to say that over the years, though, many of the churches compromised and were silent and were cowardly. But now that hundreds of churches have been bulldozed down by Mugabe's police, and now that the people are literally starving, you're finding churches starting to wake up and speak out and start to pray and act and evangelize as they should have. But unfortunately for many, it was like there was Cinderella with amnesia. And it's as though the church is waking up in Zimbabwe from a very long sleep. But some of these churches are doing excellent work. And, for example, we had a church that warned us that a provincial hospital was closing. There was absolutely no medicine at all, and the hospital couldn't manage, and so they closed. There was no food, there was no electricity, no plumbing. And the local church said, we can run it if you could bring us in more medicines and food. So we raced through, and we managed to deliver tons of medicines and food and enabled this hospital, this provincial hospital, to be reopened, and it's all being run and organized by the local church. So on these and many other cases, we've shown that where the state has failed, where the government is powerless, the local church is stepping in and filling the gap and doing what the socialists cannot do.
Well, haven't most of the doctors and professional people just left Zimbabwe?
That's true, the vast majority. Half of the total population of Zimbabwe have fled the country, and not surprisingly, too, to neighboring countries such as Zimbabwe, such as Zambia and Botswana and South Africa and Malawi and even Mozambique. I mean, imagine people fleeing to Mozambique, but Mozambique is better now than Zimbabwe was, a great reversal of what it was a few years ago. And now there's probably 5 million Zimbabweans outside the country, most of those being, of course, the professional people have fled. And in this situation, we have to take in even some medical people to be able to help in the hospital. So we're getting volunteers of medical personnel who can come in and help, because unfortunately, they even have provincial hospitals where there's no doctors left in order to administer any of the medicines that we had taken.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about South Africa, because, of course, I read an article in the Washington Post talking about this wonderful transition of power that we had in South Africa, the third time the democratic process has worked, and putting to lie this idea of voting in Africa one man, one time. You know, in other words, the idea that you would just elect one government and it would be there forever. So basically, but of course, they've changed the man in power, but the government always says, because of course we, the United States State Department, installed the communist government, the ANC, and of course then, of course, Fidel Castro and the people from Moscow, and I think Hillary Clinton and Gaddafi and all the radical leaders from all over the world were there to congratulate the election of Nelson Mandela. I remember that, and him standing with his clenched fist in front of a red communist flag. Of course, that picture was never shown on the general press in America, because we couldn't let the American people know that we'd brought a communist dictator to power. And, of course, Mandela, at least, you know, was more moderate in his views, although he was a lifelong terrorist. And wasn't that the reason he'd been in prison? It was because he was a communist terrorist and refused to disavow terrorism?
Well, indeed, yes. And this is the problem. South Africa is ruled by the African National Congress, which is a Marxist party which got to power through terrorist means. And there are millions of reasons why we would not want to vote for the ANC. And amongst them is 800,000 babies have been killed by abortion since Mandela legalized abortion in 1997. We have had well over 20,000 people every year murdered since he came to power, including over 2,000 white farmers tortured to death in the most brutal way in the country. 2,000 farmers out of a community of only 70,000 farmers. So that makes them the most murdered population in the whole of the country, in the whole world. I don't think there's anywhere else where you would have such a high percentage of people. That's about 300 farmers for every 100,000, for every 10,000 murdered every single year. It's colossal. And yet this happened under Nelson Mandela, and he doesn't seem to be at all fazed, at all bothered by this. We've got in Zimbabwe and South Africa right now governments which believe in and speak about invading farms. The ANC's passed legislation to make it possible for them to invade farms. So we've had something like 400,000 people murdered in the country since Mandela came to power in 94, 750,000 women and children raped in the 15 years of ANC rule. Yet less than 7% of these reported rapes result in convictions. We see the ANC is very soft on crime, but they're trying to disarm the law-abiding population, requiring all of us to relicense our firearms and make it very hard for people to do so.
I understand the blacks are there are furious about that. They're just telling the whites, don't register your firearms, don't go along with it.
Yes, a million licensed firearm owners have refused to re-register. So there's quite a bit of resistance to what they're doing. They've wrecked our schools. We had some of the finest schools in the continent. And they've dumbed him down with outcome-based education and kicking the Bible out and prayer out and bringing situation ethics and Planned Parenthood in to teach sex education. And so they've wrecked our schools and they've become lawless areas. Affirmative action has literally cost the South African economy over 2 million jobs. And so our value of our net worth of South Africa shrunk dramatically by over 30% in the first 10 years of ANC rule. And our rand has plummeted from 2 rand to the US dollar to 10 rand to $1.
Well, American tax dollars at work. I know when I was there, of course, we had fine medical facilities for the blacks. I headed the hospital, or the black hospital and orthopedic service in Bloemfontein, but I understand that the system of medicine is breaking down. Is that true?
Unfortunately so, Dr. Stan. In so many ways, we've got the government literally closing down specialized clinics all over the country, just so that they can continue to steal more taxes in their corruption.
And, of course, this is what's going to happen in America. The whole thrust of modern-day socialized medicine here is to ration access to health care, ladies and gentlemen, not to help. Well, Peter, you go right on. As far as medicine is concerned, is there free medical care for the blacks and the whites?
Not really. It's in fact, getting worse and worse. You can even get in hospitals where they've got a big sign saying, this medical care is free, report any attempts to get bribery, and I'll stand under that sign and demand their bribes, and you'll get no help without those bribes. And there's just a lot of not caring. And I've seen people lying in a pool of blood in the outpatients waiting for help, and nurses and doctors walking past unconcerned and literally wheeling the trolleys around them, and people sitting there with an axe in their head. I'm not joking, literally. And nobody coming and helping them, and doctors and nurses sitting down and laughing over cups of tea, and I'd go over them and tell them about this, and he'd say, oh, we'll get to them. Just no sense of concern for people. We've come across hospitals where the medical staff have literally been on strike, and there's people in terrible situations, and medical professionals so-called striking and providing no services. So there's a lot of breakdown of services, including the fact that in the whole country now, there's only one place where you can have a liver specialist unit, one place where there is a kidney specialist unit. We used to have those specialist units in every city in the country. And now, to save money, they say, but taxes are up, fraud and corruption is through the roof, and so services are way down.
So what about the industrial production? Because when I was there, of course, they had a lot of car production. They had production of a lot of things. In fact, certainly South Africa was the engine of prosperity for all of Africa. What's happening as far as your production of various items are concerned? Are the factories still there? Are new factories coming in as they were when I was there?
We are having some factories producing good materials. There are pockets of good productivity in the country. For example, in the Western Cape in particular, which is the only province in the continent of Africa ruled by an opposition party and not by the ruling government. Our province, the Western Cape, continues to vote in anti-ANC oppositions, and there's a lot of hostility from the government to it. And we've had everything from fires to car bombs and bombs all over the city in retaliation because of us voting against the ANC government. They came to power through terrorism, so they seem to want to stay in power and extend their power through terrorism. But nevertheless, we have been losing companies, and there's been people pulling out because affirmative action chases away a lot of the best skills and chases away many of the people providing jobs and employment for others. And so a lot of the best people have left. We've lost a vast amount of people. Millions of people have left the country, including some of the very ones who would be employers. And so every year you see millions more unemployed in the country. And the economy goes down and we see productivity go down because the government is concerned not for productivity, not for efficiency, but for affirmative action, racial quotas, and a lot of corruption.
What's the unemployment rate in South Africa today? Any idea what it would be?
Yes, about 40% of the people in South Africa are unemployed, officially. That would actually be worse than what the official statistics are. And I might just say on the AIDS, that's exactly the statistic for AIDS as well. I've had it from the officials who are dealing with AIDS that 40% of the adult population of South Africa officially are HIV AIDS positive.
Hold that. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, our guest is Peter Hammond from Frontline Ministries. Peter was just saying that about 40% of the adult population of HIV, pardon me, of South Africa, have AIDS, and they're all going to die. That's American tax dollars at work, because, of course, we've objected to using any standard and effective public health approaches to stop the epidemic, both in the United States and there in Africa. We know that in Botswana, why the public health authorities wanted to do what was right to stop the epidemic, but we wouldn't let them after all. We couldn't have routine testing and contact tracing like we do with every other sexually transmitted disease. Why would drive the disease underground? And of course, there in Botswana, 46% of the pregnant women are HIV infected, and sounds like it's pretty close to that in South Africa as well. American tax dollars at work. Well, let's talk a little bit about your new president. You have a new president there. We saw pictures of him in the Washington Post. Why, this very staid-looking individual, nice suit, nice tie, nice smile. Who is this man who is the new president of South Africa?
Jacob Zuma is a Zulu, and he has been a lifetime member of the ANC and of the South African Communist Party. He has 783 counts of fraud, embezzlement, and corruption against him. He has had a rape charge laid against him. The man has at least four wives at the moment. He's got some divorces behind him, too. No one knows exactly how many children he's got. So he's a very interesting candidate, just for starters. I mean, I don't know any other leader anywhere in the world who's got multiple wives and who has rape and corruption charged against him to this extent, and yet still is in power. So it's made many people say that we can't possibly have rule of law in the country when the man who has all these charges against him threatens the judiciary, and next thing the national public prosecutor says, well, he's going to shelve the case because it's not possible to prosecute a person who's the president.
And that's very interesting. Here's a man with over 700 fraud charges against him and other criminal activities, and well, they're not going to bother to prosecute him because he's the president of South Africa. Now, what about we were told, oh, this was a wonderful and fair election, and of course, now America has proven that democracy really works. What about this last election? We know that they falsified the election when Mandela got in, and we turned the country over to him, even though it was all fraudulent, the voting to get Mandela in. What about the latest election?
Massive cases of irregularities and lots of charges of fraud and many, many strange things happening. Since the election on the 22nd of April, they have found boxes of ballots abandoned in fields, half burnt. And if those are the ones you found, you wonder what happened to the ones you didn't find that went up in smoke. And what were they replaced with? Because we had record numbers of people voting. So when you start finding ballots full that are in sealed ballot boxes that have never been counted, it makes you wonder what's been going on. There was a lot of strange things. Even where I was in the where I was voting, and I was in a suburb which you would expect to have very few irregularities because in a big city like Cape Town, they ran out of ballots very early because they only appointed 600 ballots for a suburb of 20,000 people, but we were not an ANC area, so why give a lot of ballots to us? And we waited in the queue for over an hour before they even started because the scanner wasn't working. And there's all kinds of things like that, strange irregularities. Some people were tortured, some were murdered, people were shot even within some of the polling stations as a fight broke out. There was intimidation. And, you know, I think people in America would find hard to understand the presence of intimidation in most of Africa, where people live in large shanty towns and they've got very little privacy, and where these thugs come and say, we will know what you vote, and you vote for anyone except the ANC, we're going to kill you, we're going to burn out your home, we're going to kill your family. And that sort of intimidation really terrifies many people.
Well, I think it would, you know, and after all, they have the full backing of the American State Department. Why wouldn't the people be terrified? Who are they going to be ported to?
Well, indeed, and when I voted, the IEC official took the ballot out of my hand before I could put it in the ballot box, said, no, you folded this wrong, opened it up, looked at what I'd voted, refolded it a different way, and put it in. Now, that didn't intimidate me, because I'm proud of what I voted, and I wouldn't mind it being broadcast, but that would intimidate a lot of the black voters to know that an official appointed by the government looked plainly at what the person voted before it went in the box.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is what really, of course, the American government is supporting in the name of enlightened democracy. But it's the age-old plan of establishing enlightened democracies throughout the world. And, of course, it's totally fraudulent. But American tax dollars kind of have to be used for something. We've got so much money, well, of course, we really don't have that much money, and one of these days we're going bankrupt, but that's not going to matter. We're imposing enlightened democracy on the world. Don't you feel warm and fuzzy about it? This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, but what about the church in South Africa? Is Christianity having any impact on what's going on?
Dr. Stan, there really is a great spiritual hunger and thirst in our country. There are pockets of revival. Kwasis of Intermission in Zululand has had a dynamic 45-year revival, tremendous move of God. We do have Christian community radio stations, some of which are quite dedicated. There is a rise in Christian schooling and homeschooling. We do see some spiritual life, but mostly the pulpits are silent, the pulpits are quiet, pastors are cowardly, don't deal with the issues. In fact, worse than that, in some of our mega churches, you know, the huge 10,000-seater type churches, they've had people like that politician I mentioned, Jacob Zuma, who had all these fraud charges against him and rape charge, and who's head of the African National Congress. They had him in a pulpit electioneering on a Sunday morning service. And when other parties, Christian parties, asked, could we also have such an opportunity, they were told no. So only an African National Congress / Communist Party representative could come and electioneer at the church, at a mega church, but not a Christian. And you can see how bad things are in that, I believe, in the American elections, half of all those who voted for the Democrats claim to be evangelical Christians. I don't think they are real evangelical Christians, but claim to be. In South Africa, it was even worse. We had only 2% of those who voted officially. Now, I know that there was fraud, but even so, only 2% of the official vote was for Christian political parties who were pro-life, but 98% of votes went to non-Christian parties, especially those that support abortion and all these other evils. So what's going on in our country that we can have great spiritual moves? For example, 200,000 men came to a men's conference on a farm listening to a great evangelist, Angus Buchan, recently. But less than that voted for Christian parties. So what is going on when we have so many Christians in our country, but most of them aren't voting their values, most of them aren't empowering Christians in parliament, most of them are giving their vote to the pagans who have anti-Christian policies, and most of them are sending their children to be educated by the Philistines in pagan government schools.
Well, if we told in the latter days there's going to be a great falling away, and it certainly sounds like that falling away is taking place in both your country and in my country as well. And,
unfortunately,
so. But all we can do, at least we have a voice. If we get into those Christian stations over there, they can pick our programs up on the Internet, and if they want to broadcast them, we'll tell them the real truth. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan talking with Peter. Peter says that certainly there's a great spiritual hunger in South Africa, but you know, there a lot of people are looking for answers with the church, but the church is certainly just totally irrelevant as far as many of the major Christian churches, those with 10,000 people or more, are backing the Communist Party over there and all the evils of the Communist Party, and the ministers will not speak out for righteousness there, just as most of our ministers won't speak out for righteousness here. This is the great tragedy and why both South Africa and America are in real trouble today. Well, let's talk. Is there anything else you want to say about South Africa? Or should we get into what's happening in some of the other countries?
I should say something else, Dr. Stan. That is, when I drove around the country, right around South Africa recently, a long trip, I saw vast amounts of our land burned out and deforested, including big forests. And I hadn't read this anyway, but then a man involved in forestry that I spoke informed me that South Africa is approximately 60% deforested since the ANC took over. Now, all those Greens and environmentalists in America who supported the ANC should just take note. 60% less forest in our country than when Mandela took power. And many of these forests have been targeted by fires in arson claims, and they are the very same places that have been hit with land claims by ANC, COSATU, Communist Party thugs who are trying to get these lands for them to take over. You know, land theft, land invasions, like Mugabe has been doing in Zimbabwe. And so they make the claims, and then these great suppliers of paper, such as Mondi and Sappi, who own many of these forests, suddenly find their forests being hit by arson. You know, is this ecological disaster a coincidence? Is this an accident? And yet, in all of my travels and reading, I've read no articles in newspapers or on the internet concerning this. I had to physically drive around the country to learn of these. Now, I thought the news media's goal was to inform people of things, but it seems that a lot of the world's media is covering up what's really happening.
Well, I think that most Americans are totally unaware of what's really going on in Zimbabwe and what's really going on in South Africa today. I mean, we spend our time worrying about Britney Spears and Paris Hilton and, of course, who's going to win the NBA playoffs and how the Giants of the Boston Red Sox are doing. They focus our attention on unimportant things while people are being murdered and raped throughout the rest of the world, in the countries where the United States State Department is sending money to keep the tyrants in power. What is going on, Sydney, of places like Angola? What's going on in the Congo? What's going on in Darfur and in the Sudan?
Well, Dr. Stan, there's no doubt that we're in the middle of a colossal conflict, an epic conflict raging throughout Africa. It's a battle for the soul of the continent. We have animism in the center of Africa. We have Islam in the north of Africa, we have communism in the south of Africa, and all three of these worldviews and religions are locked in a world war of worldviews against Christianity. Christians are being persecuted by Muslim governments in the north of Africa, including in Sudan and northern Nigeria, by animist and Marxist governments in the center, such as in the Congo and Rwanda, and they are being persecuted by communist regimes in countries that are Marxist, such as Zimbabwe, where churches are even being bulldozed down. So in some countries, this conflict's very visible, very physical. Tens of thousands of Christians have been killed in northern Nigeria. Hundreds of churches have been burned down by Muslim mobs in northern Nigeria. In southern Sudan, we've got decades of jihad by National Islamic Front government, bombing schools, bombing churches, bombing hospitals by the Sudan Air Force. Pastors have been crucified in Sudan. Children have been kidnapped from Christian homes, enslaved, raised as Muslims. And in all of these areas, we find the Christians being targeted and yet the story not being published. And we're not just talking about Time, Newsweek, and New York Times and all of that not giving the story, but the Christian publication on telling is Christianity Today reporting on these things? It doesn't seem that even the Christian media in general is concerned about the persecution of the brothers and sisters in Christ across in Africa.
One of the great tragedies, unexplained mysteries of our time. Well, Sydney, what about Darfur? We hear a lot about Darfur, but we don't hear anything about the Christians they're killing in the Congo or the 2 million Christians they've killed in the southern Sudan. First of all, for our listeners, why, of course, the Sudanese government, this radical jihadist government, is largely funded by China Petrol. China Petrol has oil wells there. They raised their money to put in those oil wells, about $5 billion. On the American financial market, so we opened our markets to the communist oil company so they could, of course, get the money to put in the oil wells to fund the Sudanese government. Something's wrong about this, but the average American can't begin to connect the dots. Sudan, what, about 2 million Christians been killed in the southern Sudan?
That's what we believe, yes, Dr. Stan. It's absolutely remarkable that such a vast amount of media attention has been given to the suffering of Muslims in Darfur, while they completely ignore the vastly greater and much longer tragedy of of Islamic Jihad against the Christians of southern Sudan and the Nuba Mountains. In fact, many of the victims in Nuba Mountains were killed by black Muslims from Darfur. So the very people who are the targets of the world sympathy right now, the blacks are in Darfur, the black Muslims, they've done some of the worst slave raids and atrocities against the Christians in Nuba Mountains. But now that the black Muslims are fighting the Arab Muslims in Darfur, this is greatly concerning the West, but they didn't seem that concerned about the 2 million odd people, mostly Christians, who died in 50 years jihad against the Christians in southern Sudan. So Darfur, I believe, is something of a distraction. Darfur is a 99% Muslim country in western Sudan, and there is violence in Darfur, and it's terrible. It's typical Arab banditry. It's been going on for centuries. It's Muslim-on-Muslim violence, and it is horrible. But it is nothing like as severe as what has been going on against the Christians in the Nuba Mountains and southern Sudan, which has been going on longer, far higher intensity, with a much higher body count and much more atrocity. So it's bizarre that the West continually seems concerned for Muslims, but not Christians. The West was very concerned for Muslims in Bosnia, Muslims in Kuwait, Muslims in Somalia, Muslims in Afghanistan, Iraq, Muslims in Darfur. But the West stands by while hundreds of thousands of Christians are slaughtered in Rwanda, southern Sudan, the Nuba Mountains, and northern Nigeria.
I wonder why that is. Well, what about in the Congo? My understanding is that they've killed about 5 million people there in the Congo.
Yes, sir, indeed. The Congo must be one of the most difficult mission fields in Africa. Approximately 55 million people in 450 language groups in this vast country. It used to be very efficiently run with the Belgians did road and railway systems across the whole country. And it was pretty efficiently run, but they didn't prepare the people for independence. And its vast mineral resources, its agricultural potential has now been squandered by all the post-independence chaos, the corruption, the mismanagement. And now the efficient roads and railways are impossible, and they've had a succession of dictators who've plundered the Congo's natural resources, and there's been civil wars, assassinations, incredible brutality, at least 5 million people killed just in the last 10 years in the Congo, and it's devastating. But our missions, having the joy of conducting evangelistic crusades, extensive outreaches, even along the massive Congo River, and we've had literally thousands of Congolese attending our leadership training courses in the country, and we continue to go into this vast country, and our vision is nothing less than the Congo for Christ. But and there is a mass movement to Christ in the Congo, despite all of the sufferings. We're seeing the people having a great hunger for the Lord in that terrible situation.
There was an outbreak of Ebola among the guerrillas there, and this always intrigued me because, of course, it was the first time I'd ever heard of the Ebola, certainly in the animals. So it was all of the epidemics that really would occur in laboratory animals. The only animals ever got were laboratory animals, and then of course in the human number of outbreaks. Do you know if that Ebola outbreak was ever brought under control?
That is news to me, Dr. Stan. I'm not aware of that.
Okay, fine. Well, that was something I was more interested in because, of course, the question is where this new organism came from, very close to the Marburg disease that was found in Marburg, Germany. It was found only in laboratory animals, and if they hadn't, of course, been quarantined, they would have killed most of the people of Europe with the vaccines they were preparing. Well, anyway, of course, as far as the as far as what's going on, what about Angola? Is Angola reaching any sort of stability? Certainly the American government, the Chevron oil company has been backing the communist regime there for a long period of time. What about Angola?
I would not say that justice or freedom has come to Angola yet. 500 years of Portuguese rule was snuffed out in a moment in 1975 when the Portuguese left and the Cubans poured in, the Russians and the East Germans and the Vietnamese, and they just took that country and burned churches. And of course, there was a courageous resistance for many, many years by Jonas Savimbi's UNITA freedom fighters, and South African troops played a role in blunting the southward advance of communism in Angola. But at this time, because of the murder of Jonas Savimbi, the freedom fighter leader in Angola, and because that both sides fought themselves to a standstill, the death toll's huge in Angola. At this moment, things are at an awkward, volatile kind of ceasefire, but I wouldn't say it's peace. Do you know, in the first 14 years of war against the Portuguese, the so-called War of National Liberation, 1961 to 1975, 85,000 people died. Now, that was the terrorists, the guerrillas, the soldiers, the civilians, everyone. 85,000 dead in the first 14 years. That's bad. But then, in the next 15-year civil war, with the Cubans, Russians, East Germans, Marxists in Angola, fighting against the UNITA freedom fighters and the South Africans, you had 350,000 dead in the next 15 years of civil war, much worse than the so-called War of National Liberation. But since everyone agreed to ceasefire, the South Africans left, the Cubans left, the UN came in the first 3 years of the United Nations peace, 650,000 people were killed violently, which means twice as many died in 3 years of peace under the United Nations as died under 30 years of war before it. Now, the United Nations has this unique ability to go into a bad situation and make it much, much worse.
Well, I think that's a very accurate interpretation of the United Nations. That, I fear, is what's going to happen when the United Nations brings peace to the New World Order. Of course, there was a ship. It was a tanker. It was called the Condoleezza Rice. And it was, of course, was run out of Angola there by Chevron Oil Company. And then, of course, well, it disappeared one day, never to be seen again. And they simply repainted it, gave it another name. After all, we couldn't have the American people understanding that the tanker named after the woman who would become chairman of the National Security Council and then Secretary of the State, been produced by the Chevron Oil Company. It was backing the communist government there. That certainly wouldn't look very good. Chevron certainly has played an important part of keeping the communists in power, hasn't it?
It has. In fact, Gulf Chevron has financed so much of the Cuban military buildup, and they said that what they were doing was paying for security for their oil fields, but they were doing much more than that. They were paying Marxist mercenaries, the Cuban communist troops, to enable them to sustain their work in Angola, which was basically burning down churches, burning down villages, burning crops, scorched earth, oppressing the people. And a lot of the bill of the Cubans in Angola was financed by Gulf Chevron. That meant while Americans were filling up their tanks with fuel from Gulf Chevron, they were subsidizing communist oppression and persecution in Angola.
So many things going on in the world just don't make any sense. Well, what about Zambia? Because that used to be the northern part of Rhodesia, and for a time, of course, it was headed by a Marxist communist government, and then of course, he was forced out of office, and Zambia really has changed dramatically, hasn't it?
Yes, I'm glad to be able to have some good news for you here, and certainly Zambia is an example of a country going from communism to Christianity. The first time I went to Zambia on a mission trip in 1987, I and the three other frontline missionaries were arrested, we were tortured, we were imprisoned for taking Bibles through to communist Mozambique, going through Zambia. So Zambia at that stage was officially a socialist, humanist state under the Marxist Kenneth Kaunda, and we were very badly treated then. But since then, by God's grace, the Christian church has mobilized, they prayed, they pressured, they protested, and the Marxists were removed from power, and overwhelmingly in the first free elections ever in 1991, Christians came to power, and the new president, Frederick Chiluba, declared the country officially a Christian country, rewrote the constitution, made a Christian amendment, and then they had a national day of repentance and prayer and national day of thanksgiving, and abortion is now illegal in Zambia. Babies are protected by law. Pornography is illegal. Homosexuality is a crime. The Bible is back in schools. Prayer is back in schools. Evangelists and pastors and missionaries have complete access to the army, the police, the prisons, government radio, TV, the schools. And we do. We go in and minister there. And we've met with the president. There's many good things going on in Zambia. Zambia's gone from a country that was once a basket case to being a country that's now exporting food. They've been welcoming hundreds of the Zimbabwean white farmers who have fled Zimbabwe, whose farms have been looted by Mugabe's thugs. Hundreds of those farmers have found sanctuary in Zambia, and Zambia's given them farms, and those farmers have now enabled Zambia to be, for the first time in its independence, a food exporting country, producing enough food for their own people and to export. And the Zimbabwean kwacha has revalued several times and strengthened against the US dollar, something that had never happened before. So there's some good things going on then. I do a lot of ministry in Zambia, and there's great hunger for Christ, and missionaries and evangelists are going from Zambia into all its communist neighbors, Angola, Congo, Zimbabwe, Mozambique. So praise God that there's one bright spot out there in Africa where we can see the trend has been in the other direction, where people have been turning back to Christ.
And of course, when where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty, there's freedom, there's prosperity, and of course, when you turn against God, why, there's ultimate chaos.
Yes.
What about Kenya? Well, you, certainly the Kenya was one time a great and wonderful game reserves, and you know, we always heard the stories about Kenya out of Africa. What about Kenya? Is that having some stability there?
Yes, Dr. Stan, there is some stability because there are many Christians in Kenya, but they do have a strong, sizable Muslim minority, about 20%, who are quite agitating. And, you know, of course, there was the terrible terrorist attack on the U.S. Embassy in Kenya, in Nairobi, back in 1998. But Kenya is a base of operations for missions because of its strong Christian orientation, and we have operated from Kenya into Sudan and done a lot of work there. And Kenya is a mission base for many missions working into neighboring countries. So it's a more stable country. There's a lot of corruption there, though. The British ambassador said that the number of honest politicians that he knew of could be written, their names could be written on the back of a postage stamp.
Well, before we go on, I want you to get your, I want you to get your web page out so people can hopefully support you.
Our web is www.frontline.org.za. That's frontline.org.za. You can email Anna Marie at info@frontlinefellowship.net, info@frontlinefellowship.net, or you can phone toll-free 866-785-7210. So it's 866-785-7210.
And of course, if anybody didn't get those and want to get them, you can call our 800 number. We support Peter and what he's doing. I wish I could be over there, but that's not my calling. I'm called to be on radio, and so we do support him. We hope many of you will give serious consideration of doing it as well and sharing in their mission. Well, Peter, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap the program up.
Well, Dr. Stan, I must say, as we're involved in this world war of worldviews and we see so much of our culture hijacked by humanism and by communism, we have been infiltrated. And the Marxists have always taught that there's 5 culture-carrying institutions that they have to take control of to subvert a country: education, entertainment, news media, religious institutions, and political institutions. Well, that's true for them. It's also true for us. If we want to rescue and redeem and salvage our culture and reform our culture, we need to get back involved in education, entertainment, news media, religious institutions, especially the colleges, and, of course, involved in political activity as well. We must be informed. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. We must be interceding. We need to pray. We need to be a house of prayer for all nations. And we need to be involved. We must make disciples, teach obedience. The enemy is confusing, dividing and conquering. He's corrupting and conquering. We must fulfill the Great Commission. We must fight for the good fight of faith. There's so much that we can do, but we need to be informed. And we've got a lot of ammunition we can give you from the African side of what our mutual enemies are doing on that side, and you've got so much great material on this side. So we need to join hands to fight a common enemy, the United Nations, the World Council Churches, the people behind who pull the strings, these puppet masters, the Council on Foreign Relations, and so on. So please do check our website out, frontline.org.za, or phone 866-785-7210. We'd love to provide you with documentation, information, films, CDs, DVDs, things that you can use to mobilize and inform your people so that we can win our countries back to Christ.
Well, Sydney, the only solution, the only hope I see for Africa, it would be turning to God. But, you know, until, of course, you're able to deal with the animists and the communists and the Muslims, of course, they control the reins of power in many places. Is Nigeria straightened out at all? Because you've got a large Christian component there, but you've got this very, very powerful Muslim component as well.
Yes, and unfortunately, most of the Christians are neutral, passive, inactive. We've got to mobilize the Christians to action. None of us can afford to sit on the sidelines. We must stand up. We must speak out. We must step out. We must be involved. And we must get other friends involved. Get them listening to community independent radio stations like this. Get them on the frontline mailing list. Get them involved on the e-groups and writing letters to editor and writing to congressmen and mobilizing their friends, organizing meetings and home groups. There's so much all of us can do, but we have to fight because we'll lose our freedoms and our lives if we don't.
And freedom is lost when good people do nothing, and all that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. God bless you, Peter. We'll hope to talk to you real soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless everyone on Regular.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope you, of course, enjoyed our interview with Peter. We enjoy it every time he comes over here. Keep us abreast of what's going on. It brings back fond memories of our travels and our life in Africa. We lived in South Africa. I was a senior surgeon on the orthopedic service at the Pelonomi Hospital. We were told recently by one of my friends, this is a wonderful hospital. We had about 80 orthopedic beds and I don't know how many surgical beds. We did all sorts of wonderful surgery and reconstructive surgery on the black population. They simply closed down the surgery. There's no money for it. The whole country is beginning to fall down thanks to the fact that the American State Department destroyed the infrastructure of that nation and has brought communist thugs to power. And if they would do that there, why would you think they wouldn't do it here? We're entering a period of chaos and crisis in the United States. Our economy is crumbling. It's not happening by accident. It's happening by intent. And we need, of course, to get the truth out to the American people. And so we hope that you'll maybe want to get a copy of this program. Peter talked during the breaks, and a lot of great information. If you'd like to get his telephone number, you can call us, and if you didn't get it, why, we'd be glad to provide it. We encourage people to support them because they're doing God's work in Africa. Certainly, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. We have a great four-tape set called The Other Holocaust. Goes into what happened in Rwanda, my interviews with the people who were there in Rwanda immediately after the Christians were slaughtered there, while the American State Department was putting out orders, never use the word democracy, pardon me, never use the word genocide. Why, if you use the word genocide in comparison with, in respect to Rwanda, why, we would have to intervene. And they slaughtered knowingly and intentionally 800,000 Christians, and of course there were UN troops there that could have intervened, and the orders were given, do not try to save the Christians. They let them be slaughtered, and if they'd let that happen there, why wouldn't they let that happen here? And if God is just, you think he's not going to bring his judgment on this country? You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret. You need to get the syllabus on the Forbidden Secret. You need to learn what's going on. You need to, of course, get our material on. The background of the financial crisis did not happen by accident. It happened by intent. And the ultimate goal is to destroy the value of our country and to create chaos here. And then, of course, they can impose martial law. You need to get my talk on the planned police state. I mean, why do you think that they want to mark your front door? They've hired 140,000 census takers, and every one of them has a little meter that they can go, and they will mark your front door. They're going to every door in the United States so that they will know exactly the coordinates of where you live. But don't feel bad. They're doing it all over the world because this is a worldwide movement, largely funded with your tax dollars, to mark every single individual in the world so they can monitor and control them. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV. More. Should be our webpage, radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com. Go there, listen to our programs. They're archived. They're on satellite feed. They're MP3. They're blogged. Encourage other people to listen, to get the information you're not going to get from regular channels. We offer a syllabus, the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness. There really is secret societies, and of course, semi-secret societies. Certainly, the Council on Foreign Relations was formed as a front for a secret society that was created in 1891 to bring about a world government. And that is the purpose of the Council on Foreign Relations. And between the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, they control the banking industry, the Federal Reserve System. It is